I'm going to get a little spicy with you for a second. Okay. So, Austin, if I asked you, can you please tell me in great detail about your last awesome sexual experience?
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. This episode is brought to you by these sponsors.
Navigating the college journey can be overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. At College Knowledge Foundation, we're here to guide students and families every step of the way. From choosing the right college to crafting standout essays and understanding financial aid, our virtual sessions and free consultations provide the tools you need to succeed. Join the growing community of students and families who've discovered how to take control of their college journey. Visit College Knowledge Foundation to learn more, book a session, or explore our free resources today.
Are you in the mood for some mouth-watering Italian dinners? Homemade bread, cheese steaks, hot subs, cold subs, salads, sides, and of course, delicious pizza? Look no further than Angelo's, located at 1032 South 5th Ave, Lebanon. Call 717-273-8579 to place your order now. Haynes Auto Detailing, run by owner Josh Haynes, offers a professional service that is sure to have your vehicle shining from wheel to wheel. My wife and I both trust Josh with our personal vehicles, and believe me, with two kids, the back seats tend to look like a hot mess. But after a trip to Haynes Auto Detailing, the vehicles look better than brand new, both inside and out. Message Haynes Auto Detailing on Facebook or call 717-679-3673 to get your vehicle looking right today. Are you in the mood for getting out of your house this evening? Head over to Boyer's Tavern in Rexmont, PA. They have appetizers, soups, salads, wings, mouth-watering burgers, sandwiches, and many other entrees to choose from. Proper food and drinks made by slightly improper folks. Head over to Boyer's Tavern today or give them a call at 717-450-4063. In this episode, we have Alyssa Parado, CEO of SARC, Sexual Assault Resource and Counseling Center of Lebanon and Schuylkill Counties. Allie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me,
Austin. Yes, thank you for coming in.
Here. Yeah. It's a beautiful, actually it's not, it's a very rainy Saturday morning and a little bit wrong, cold. I'm a little bit bummed about it, but
yeah, it's
I'm
a little
glad
overcast.
To be here with you.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Yes, I'm glad you're here. So I want to get some background about you, but for the listeners, just to give them kind of like to set the table, right? We are recording this episode on March 15th, but the episode will release the first Wednesday of April. And for those that may not know, April is Sexual Assault Awareness. And I think this is a good time to remind people in the community what all SARC has to offer to increase awareness and identify strategies and resources to prevent, sexual violence.
Yeah, absolutely. So every year it's Sexual Assault Awareness Month in April. We always run a series of educational events, community outreach events, and programs. I actually wore my special t-shirt today from one of our past Thriver Walk events, which is one of our Sexual Assault Awareness Month activities that we try to do each year. This year it's on April 24th, and it's going to be at Monument Park. So I'll probably plug that a few times
as we
keep talking, just so your listeners in the area know that they can come out for a totally free event and an opportunity to just learn great information, good grounding strategies. And we try to go on a little walk and talk at the same time too, which is cool.
And what time or how can they learn more about the walk since we're talking
absolutely.
About it?
Yeah. So SARC is a nonprofit organization. We have a website, we have social media, we try to be really active on both of them, and we put information out into the community through listservs, community like resource list groups and things like that. But if you wanted to visit sarcheals.org, sarcheals.org, you can check out all of our events that are coming up.
Okay.
This is one of like many things that we have going on during the month of April and truly throughout the whole year. We always have something happening, whether it's support groups that are running or educational programs that we're offering out to the world. We do a ton of community education, especially for professionals and trying to kind of mobilize community violence prevention strategies and building trauma-informed responses to survivors. So our website is a great resource, or social media, check us out, and just keep checking in with us. And if you want to see something, because we're an organization that was founded with the purpose of meeting the needs of survivors of sexual assault, abuse, harassment, and in more recent years, we've been doing work with trafficking as well.
Really?
Anyone who has something to say on those topics, holding the voices and experiences of survivors of those types of violence at the center of what we do is really the core of our mission. We're an organization that was founded right here in Lebanon County.
Okay.
I know you said your organization that we're sitting at has been here since 1980.
Yep, Color Tech.
We're just a little bit younger than Color Tech, okay. Right? So we were founded in 1983.
1983.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Sark is older than me, but but younger than Color Tech.
There we go. Right. That's a good way to look at it. Yeah. And it's local. Yeah. It started right here in Lebanon County.
Yeah, started right here in Lebanon County. But what's really cool, so a whole bunch of sexual assault centers actually got started all around that same time period.
Okay.
So a lot of the big ones got started in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia and some of the big urban areas. But then what we saw was that they popped up in lots of communities. And that was really because there was a distinct need that wasn't being served by sexual assault survivors, right? Okay. So sexual assault in and of itself, it's a crime, right? So it is using actions or behaviors of a sexual nature against another person against their will, right? And there's lots of different crimes code things that might fall into the umbrella of sexual violence. Child sexual abuse is one example. Sexual exploitation or human trafficking is another. Sexual assault, rape. These are all hard topics to talk about.
Yeah, very heavy.
Heavy topics, and they cover lots of different and complex systems in the community. And to give you an example, so a person who experiences sexual violence may have a crime that they could report to the police.
Mm-hmm.
They may need medical care in the aftermath of it, either right away or in long after. They may have emotional or traumatic responses to it that they may want some kind of therapeutic or mental health or counseling support for. There may be issues or complexities that come along with the victimization that lead to instability in housing, difficulty paying bills.
Didn't think about that.
Yeah, there's just tons of information out there. And then we've got over 40 years of experience to kind of back it up locally.
Yeah.
That
local level.
This type of violence really is profound, and it has a ripple effect in a person's life and in the lives of the people who love and care about them too. At the same time, what is really tough about responding to sexual assault, it's why we have Sexual Assault Awareness Month in April. It's a topic that we aren't good at talking about, right? So, I'm going to get a little spicy with you for
please,
a second.
Okay.
Austin, if I asked you, can you please tell me in great detail about your last awesome sexual experience? Your face, right? What just happened to you?
Yeah.
That's a really
I got a little red in the face.
Right. Austin, your cheeks turned red. Your eyes
got
the size of trash can lids.
Yeah.
And you looked way off and away into the distance of this room.
Right.
And you were like, wait, I can't say that on
spicy,
this podcast. Right.
Right.
So and that was consensual, happy, excited to be there.
Yes.
Experiences,
right? Right, right.
When we ask survivors of sexual violence to talk about in great detail, in chronological order, their experience of what happened to them, that uncomfortable feeling that you just had about something awesome for you, as right. that's just part of human sexuality and humanity, it takes a totally different turn. So talking about it in and of itself can be re-traumatizing. Like talking about it with someone who is a perfect stranger mm-hmm. or who is, in a position of power or authority, or who is someone that you care deeply about and don't want to make them hurt because of the hurt that you have to talk about in the course of it. Mm-hmm. It just adds so much complexity to being able to talk about it. So what happens then is people don't talk about it, and in many cases, the person who perpetrates the violence will also tell them, you won't be believed if you talk about this, right? So when they perpetrate the violence, whether it's using grooming behaviors with like child sexual abuse victims, mm-hmm. for example, or dating violence, if it's an assault that happens in a dating or an acquaintance scenario, we've got, LVC is a college campus locally here. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of work and outreach there. That may be a topic that we talk about on that community more often. But the people who perpetrate this violence will often tell the victims, listen, like, you're not going to be believed. If you talk about this, people are going to think you're the crazy one. I have credibility in the community. We've been dating. Who's going to believe you that like this happened?
So they almost it's almost like they put them on an island or make them feel like powerless,
isolated.
Right?
Isolated. Yeah. So you're isolating. Yeah. You're using shame as a tool to promote the silence. And then as a community, as a society, we don't talk about sex and sexuality openly. So it's like two ends of the spectrum, right? So either things are hypersexualized and you're watching music videos that are like crazy sexualization,
TV shows,
right?
Social media.
It mm-hmm. just plants information and ideas that is potentially really problematic or confusing.
Yeah.
And then the other side of it is we say, don't talk about this at all. You know, we talk about abstinence only with young people as they grow up. And so there's never a safe space to get good information or learn the skills and tools for talking about it. And so that really creates like this dynamic that makes it possible for people who perpetrate sexual violence to capitalize on those strategies of isolation, of coercion, of manipulation at any time. And then the survivors of the violence feel like there's no way anyone's going to believe me. If I talk about this, I'll be the one in trouble. And then it's incredibly difficult, challenging, and potentially re-traumatizing to talk about too.
Yeah. Wow. Allie, let's take a sip break. This sip break is brought to you by Garage Beer. From the garage to the cooler, whether you're on the golf course, just got done cutting your lawn on a hot summer day, or spending some quality time on the grill, grab yourself a Garage Beer. It's just beer-flavored beer. So to pick back up, Allie, I want to get some background about yourself.
Yeah.
Because, obviously, you being the CEO, there's a story to you and you're, growing up and your journey. So let's get some mm-hmm. background on that. And then I want to get right back into SARC and what all SARC does for the community here in Lebanon.
Absolutely. So I grew up in Lebanon County. I was born here. I was born at what used to be the Hyman Kaplan Pavilion,
yeah.
which like everybody that was like Lebanon County kid got born there.
Yeah,
right?
I think I was born there. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And so that's where I was born. I was raised here.
Okay.
My parents are from the Scranton area originally, but they moved here to go to Lebanon Valley. So they are Lebanon Valley grads. My dad actually came down first. He was there to play basketball. So he was like a big basketball
guy. So he's tall?
When we walked in here and you were like, watch your head. You're actually very tall
walking down into this space.
Yeah. I am. So that's stuff that if you meet me on the street, sometimes it's like the things that you'll remember about Allie. I am over 6 feet tall. I have giant hair.
Your hair's awesome. Yeah. I was going to say that too. Okay, good.
And you have no hair.
I know.
So I, like,
yin and yang. It's like complete opposite.
We have to take a picture together so that we can remember this, right?
Yeah. When you walked in, I was like, she is very tall. Yeah. I didn't think it because, you know, I tried to do some research and everything. But so your dad was also
So my dad is taller than me. He was a big basketball player at LVC. He was a 1,000-point scorer, and he coached there for almost 30 years.
What's his name?
Scott Malin.
Scott, okay,
yeah.
Scott, okay.
So people usually know either one or both of my parents because they, for lots of reasons, like they were active and involved in the community in lots of different ways. My dad with basketball. He also worked for Lebanon County Probation when I was younger and then worked for the IU for a long time and WellSpan. He's
a little bit of everything.
He's been a little bit of everywhere. And then my mom, growing up, I was a Y brat, so my mom worked at the Lebanon Y.
Okay,
and
I love that, a Y brat.
That's what we were. We were there all the time.
That was a place to hang out.
We didn't have a choice. It was where we had to
right,
be.
That's true.
But at the same time, my mom is an incredible force to be reckoned with in recreation. She currently runs the Lititz Rec Center down in Lancaster County.
Okay.
Yeah. So her name's Karen. And so she was running all kinds of programs at the Y. She started in aquatics, but then it was all over the place. She opened youth centers. They took over community pools when I was younger.
Wow.
The Y really had this huge footprint in Lebanon County. And just constantly adding sports and recreation programs. So every time there was a new camp, class, activity, I did arts and crafts camp and swim camp.
You're right,
and I was in it.
Yeah.
Because we were the testing, so my siblings and I were the testing ground
for
all the new things.
Yeah.
And it made it possible for my mom to be able to be at work and do all the stuff that she needed to do.
Right. That makes sense.
So, and I'm one of five too. So I always moved in a pack. So I'm the oldest of five kids.
I love
kids.
It. Moved in a pack. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You had a whole crew.
So we were Y brats in a pack. Yeah.
Yeah, I love this.
And it was really convenient because five is enough for a basketball team. So we could.
Yeah. No, that's right. That's true. Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Yeah. We never all played at the same time on the same teams.
Yeah.
Cool. So I grew up in a big family, in a family that was really, really active in the Lebanon County community and just a lot of work out and about in lots of different spheres and spaces, whether it's sports or recreation or, the Y is incredibly active with daycare and just all kinds of community stuff.
Yeah.
And then my dad was also working in, especially with young people and kind of building young people and young people that are at risk and have had difficult backgrounds and just trying to help them find their way.
Right.
Yeah.
So do you think as you were growing up, with your siblings and such, do you think seeing your parents being so involved in the community impacted you and helped guide you to where you are now?
Yeah, I think so. I think we were always out in the community. It was a part of who we are and who we were.
Mm-hmm.
I think seeing my parents so active and connected in different spaces and just really passionate about what they did, it's how I learned the skills of being passionate and doing good work and doing it in connection and collaboration in the community. So I think my parents were incredible role models. I still call them when I have questions.
Do you?
About
yeah.
stuff. Oh, yeah.
Nothing
absolutely.
Wrong with that. Heck yeah.
Yeah. And they still live locally. And two of my siblings also live in Lebanon County. The other two, one's in Dauphin County, one's in Lancaster.
Okay. Yeah,
sorry,
definitely
getting
local.
Kind of froggy. Sorry.
Yeah. No problem at all. So, so from being a Y brat, as
a
you
Y
say,
brat,
a Y
yeah.
brat. Yeah, I love that. And then, going to school local here, but then college or let's get from being a Y brat to being the CEO of SARC. What was that journey like?
Yeah. So my mom especially had her way, I would have gone to LVC and she could have kept me close.
Oh, you didn't go to LVC?
I did not go to LVC.
Okay.
No. I took classes there when I was in high school. I'm an Anvil grad. So I graduated from Anvil Cleona. And they had a program where in your junior and senior year, you could go take classes at LVC instead mm-hmm. of taking classes at the high school. So I did that and it was great. It, It was an awesome opportunity, and I would encourage anybody who is in high school and has the ability to be able to do something like that and get college credits and not have to pay for them because of the partnerships, like absolutely take advantage of that. I went into college with a full semester of course credits. Ready to go. And it gave me a great starting point and kind of helped like make the transition to college level academic work from the high school setting. So I took classes at LBC, and my mom really wanted me to go there, but I really, really wanted to get away because I was too close. Gosh, like I've been in Lebanon County my whole life and I need to get out and I have to see the world. And,
right?
Not too long ago, my grandma was telling, she was reminding me that I told her when I was in high school that I wanted to get out and never come back.
Oh, and never come back.
Yeah. And guess what?
Here you are.
I came back.
Yeah.
Not only did I come back, but I came back really quickly. So
okay.
I graduated from college and came home and I worked this summer.
Where did you go? I'm sorry.
Oh, I went to the University of Scranton.
University of Scranton. Okay.
Yeah, so it's a.
So you went back. Your parents came to LBC.
I went back to where my parents started and got away from.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I absolutely loved the University of Scranton. It was a fantastic school and a great experience. So I laugh because it's a little bit funny. I changed my major several times in the course of my academic life at Scranton. So I started as an English major. I changed to a criminal justice major, and then I changed to a sociology major, and then I landed in economics. So
you covered a lot of places there, a lot of industries.
Yeah. So I ended up, because I jumped majors so many times, I had all of these I don't know, enough credits to be able to have all these minors. It's a little bit embarrassing, and I'm actually a total nerd. I love school and I love everything about school.
Everything.
I'm actually back in school now
because
I love it so much. So I ended up with a dual degree in economics and philosophy, and then I have minors in criminal justice, sociology, English, and women's studies.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. So, you do like learning. You have everything covered.
I went in with all these great credits from the high school program at LBC. Yeah. I had just this awesome foundation to start from. Okay. So it was really cool. Yeah. So I learned about everything.
Everything. So you did. You covered everything. And that's probably helping you now in your job, being the CEO. But I got to ask too, because I'm sure some of the listeners are wondering, did you volleyball, basketball? You had to play sport.
Oh my gosh. No.
And I'm sorry,
played basketball in high school. So we were Anvil girls back then, actually pretty big.
We're ballers.
We're pretty good.
Yeah.
I got sick of, just like I was sick of living in Lebanon County when I was 18.
Yeah.
I was I don't want to play basketball anymore. I've been playing this my whole life. I'm ready to try something new. And I started rugby in college.
Rugby?
Yeah.
Allie, rugby. I didn't see that coming. I thought, she could say volleyball because that makes sense. Wow, rugby.
Yeah, so I played rugby my first 2 years. And then I had this friend who was a marathon runner. And I hate running. I think it is the worst.
Yeah.
There's no, nothing that I love about it, but I wanted the challenge, and I trained for a half marathon in the second half of college.
So when we first sat down
you were like, oh, do you do anything for fitness? And I was like, yeah, but it changes all the time. It's constantly moving.
Yeah.
And I had 2 years of my life where I was long distance running, and then I didn't want to do it anymore. So,
wow. Yeah, rugby, that's a turn. Okay. So you graduate from Scranton. How do you end up back here in good old Lebanon County?
So I had all those academic things that I did in college, I would actually say that it was my non-curricular activities in college that led me to my ultimate job in life. Yeah. So I was really active in a campus women's center, in doing peer education groups under the Community Health and Wellness Center that was at our campus. And actually, there's a really funny story that goes into how I got into anti-sexual violence work.
Okay. If you care to share.
Yeah. So So a guy I thought was cute on campus at an activities fair, it like said, "Hey, you should really come and be a part of our peer education team." And yeah. there were like three choices. One was like drug and alcohol education. One was like, I think it was like suicide and mental health. And the other was healthy relationships and sexual assault prevention.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, this guy, he's kind of cute. He seems nice. Like I'll go pick right. one of these. And I just landed in one of them as a peer educator.
Really?
And, yeah. And that's how I got started.
That's how the journey started. Yeah.
Right. But then like, there's all those like, academic things that I had going on or like yeah. interests that I had. I was in women's studies course, things like that. And really developed an active frame of reference for how sexual assault, domestic violence, relationship abuse impact people's lives. And then how it's sort of used as a tool of hurting other people or keeping them down. And so like it yeah. fit really well within the feminist framework and the women's studies courses I was taking.
Okay.
And it was like one of the things that I love about a feminist theory is that like it's supposed to be tied to practice. So it's not something that you just learn about in books.
I see what you're saying.
It's yeah. something that's rooted in actual practical work mm-hmm. that's happening in the community. And I think you see that with organizations like SARC, like the places that were started back at the cusp of like the women's movements that were happening in the 60s and 70s. Those organizations came to be because of women that were sitting around kitchen tables and living rooms and recognizing that there wasn't anything in the community for the survivors of these types of violence. And these types of violence were commonly used as tools to really hurt people in their relationships, yeah. in workplaces, in educational settings, and had like long-lasting impacts that made it just so much more difficult for people to live their lives and live happy, healthy lives. So the incredible women, and a lot of them are still around in Lebanon County, actually, who started SARC, were the women who recognized like sexual assault is not an issue that's addressed well here,
mm-hmm.
Or it's disjointed in how it's addressed is probably the better
right.
like description. Because of all of the ways that it touches different systems. So they developed an advocacy organization to help sort of like bridge those systems together. And sexual assault advocacy is really rooted in the idea that nobody chooses to experience sexual violence. It's a crime where choice is just completely taken away from you. Someone else chooses to commit violence against you. But where people can make choices is in their healing process. And they can make choices about how they seek justice or accountability following the experience of the violence.
Right.
And they can make choices about who they tell, when they tell, where they tell it, and sort of like how they use their story to make lasting change and make it a part of their healing experience.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but in having those choices available to them, maybe they feel some sort of power, getting some sort of power back by being able to share their story and help others, or even just, you know, being able to talk about it. Like you said, it can be so
yeah.
difficult, but I'm sure, I know when I get something off my chest, you know, whether it's a long day at work or talk to my wife, or whatever it may be, you feel better. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? When you can talk about it and get it off your chest. And I would think that's how maybe
yeah.
they would feel. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a transformative thing.
There we go. Thank
especially
you.
Especially when the person who perpetrated the violence told you over and over again that no one would believe you, or if you talk about this, you'll be the one in trouble, or, you know, like this makes you a bad person that this happened to
yeah.
you. When you are sort of like holding that inside you, it can have just really difficult and devastating influence mm-hmm. on your life, on the way your thinking works. And being able to talk about that in a space where the role and the job of an advocate or a sexual assault advocacy organization is to believe survivors, is to provide access to information and support as they make their decisions about what the healing process looks like and means for them, and finding ways to help the survivors take the action, use their voices in a way that is meaningful and restorative and full of compassion for them at the time too.
You being the CEO, I'm sure you've seen a lot of different, may I call them cases maybe, or incidences. I guess there's no real, and you, I guess we'll never really know the answer, but the perpetrators that do this, why?
What happens? Well, why? Oh, why?
Like,
oh.
Yeah, I mean, like what, and what happens? I mean, because they can get away with it for so long unless who it's happening to speaks up, you know, the person it's happening to. So like, but there has to be a reason, like, I don't know. I feel like normal people don't do this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I don't think you're wrong, Austin. I think, you know, there's a lot of research out there. They did a lot of research around college campus perpetration, actually. So like that's where a lot of the data comes from. But what they find is that it's not like everybody's out there committing sexually violent crimes, right? It is a very small proportion of the population. You know, I think it's like 2 to 5% by the research. So small proportion of the population is committing these crimes, but they are committing them against many, many people over time.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Sexual assault, abuse, harassment, they're pervasive. So people experience those things regularly. They're common. They're underreported. Mm-hmm. They're not talked about. But when you look at like lifetime prevalence of experiencing sexual assault or abuse, it's 1 in 4 women. So like in any group of women sitting at the table in the cafe, at least one of them has probably experienced directly sexual assault. In children, it's also very common. And what we see is that, so in any given classroom of 25 kids, 5 of them will likely have experienced sexual abuse in the last year.
Wow.
So that like that's prevalence, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that we see is that so when we started looking at the data and we were studying it in like college settings, women were disclosing that they were experiencing sexual assault at significantly higher rates than men. But then as you kind of like unpack it and get into it, one of the things that we see is that in children, girls and boys experience sexual victimization at roughly the same rates. But then something happens after the age of 10 where boys stop talking about it. And they don't disclose it anymore.
Yeah.
And so so there's sort of like we can surmise from that there's approximately equal numbers of victims early in life. But because of social pressure, stigma, difficulty talking.
You're a boy, like, you're like, supposed to be tough, and you don't talk about this, and you don't have emotions or feelings.
So we see a decline in teens and in men who seek support for it, disclose it, report it. So that's sort of like a lifespan thing that happens that affects you know, what the rates look like out there. Like if you're going to look up our rates of survivors we serve at SARC.
Yeah.
Last year, actually, you asked me to bring some stuff to.
Yeah,
so I brought my impact report. Here's one for you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
you can check it out. But to give you an idea, so last year in Lebanon County alone, we saw almost 400 sexual assault clients. 148 of them were children. So under the age of 18.
How many? I'm sorry.
148.
Oh my!
Just last like 1 year of time. So on average, we see around like somewhere around 1,000 to 1,200 survivors in any given year across our two counties. So and it goes back like some years we have more in Lebanon, some years we have more in Schuylkill.
Yeah.
But like I think when I start to say like. The numbers are actually there. It's not just a small handful of people. It's like every year we have hundreds of people in our local community who ask for help from SARC for sexual assault and abuse issues. So it is prevalent It is common, and we are seeing the tip of the iceberg of right, what this
here,
happening
here in Lebanon
too,
and
right?
Schuylkill County.
Yeah,
counties. Yeah.
But so your initial question though was like, why do people perpetrate these crimes? And I mean, I feel like I say this all the time. Yeah. I think hurt people hurt people. I think that sometimes mm-hmm. it's used as a tool of control. I think sometimes it's used as a way of, I don't know, getting the hurt you feel inside out into the world somehow, some way. Sometimes it's intentionally an act of violence. So like, that's one of the things that we see with sort of like Pennsylvania has been looking at rising rates of like group violence, for example. Okay. So gang activity, it's commonly called group violence in law enforcement settings now. Sometimes sexual violence is used as an initiation tactic or strategy in those settings. It's also used in hazing at fraternities.
That's true.
On college campuses.
I've heard stories
so,
of that.
Right. Yeah. So like, so sexual violence, abuse, all of that, it's commonly used in lots of different settings. But what we find is that the folks who are perpetrating that violence, they're not your everyday walk around people, but mm-hmm. they are often pretty good at perpetrating the crime and get better at it over time. So their first perpetration might be a little bit sloppy, but they learn from it, and then they violate more people as they get better at it.
Wow.
And because it's underreported, because it's underprosecuted, because like actually getting like from reporting the crime to someone being in jail happens a very small proportion of the time. Like law and order would have us
really?
Believe that this goes really quickly. No,
no.
Not at all. A person may have, you know, a case that is looming for years before we ever we ever get to a trial.
Jeez,
yeah,
that's insane. Wow, because it's. I mean, it's. I mean, you mentioned the numbers of children just here. Like I said, in Lebanon, Schuylkill County. It's like that. It's happening all over the world, you know, and all over the country and all the state and such. And it's like, I could never imagine. To me, it's disgusting and it's awful. Like. I just, I'm glad that there's organizations like SARC that's doing something and out there for these people because, like you said, 1 in 4, you know, but then children, it's like, it's mind-blowing, especially having 2 young children, it's like...
Yeah, I
can't
kids
imagine.
Too.
You're 3, yeah. You shared with me, thank you for sharing, Allie, but it's like, wow. I'm going to take a quick sip break if that's all right.
Yeah. It's a lot. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, it's like, I'm getting fired up. I can feel like, you know, because, you know, I'm just, like I said, picture my kids or anybody's kids. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's just, wow. Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of a big deal.
It
right?
is.
Yeah,
it,
like
yeah,
when you really sit with the
numbers,
the big picture of it.
Yeah.
It's common. It's pervasive. It thrives in silence. It's something that our community hasn't been particularly skilled at talking about. And not just our community. It's not just a Lebanon problem or a Schuylkill problem.
No.
Like it's a
that's what's
global
so mind-blowing
issue.
Is, yeah.
Yeah.
It's wild. I just it's hard to wrap your mind around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, I just sort of pick back up. I like the emphasis on community education. Okay.
Yeah, so maybe that's where we go from here, because I think I just like blasted you with, this is a bad thing.
Yes.
So like, what do we do about it?
Let's go
right?
there.
Yeah.
Perfect,
okay.
Allie. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah,
yep.
So,
okay.
All right. So I scared you with
all
my facts.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I really got a little emotional.
And information.
I
don't intend to shock people. It's not our style to scare or re-traumatize.
Yeah.
But I do think, especially coming into Sexual Assault Awareness Month, that it's incredibly important that our community does understand the scope of the issue and the problem and the gravity of the numbers of people who are affected by it, the long-lasting impacts to people's lives. You know, early sexual abuse or victimization can have a long-time impact on people if it's not addressed and treated or stopped, right? So a child who has adverse experiences is more likely to struggle with mental health later in life, more likely to have suicidal thoughts or attempts. But there's also long-lasting effects to health that I think is important to kind of talk about.
Yeah, definitely.
So people who have a lot of trauma in their childhood are more likely to develop cancer later in life, more likely to develop heart disease later than life. They're likely to have social impact. So like they may miss work or miss school because of the trauma that they experience. So it's at much higher rates than people who experience no trauma early in life or a victimization of any kind. And so the other thing that sort of happens is because trauma has those lasting impacts, there's an exponential process that happens. So someone experiences sexual abuse, it increases their risk of being victimized in other ways and later in life. So a sexual abuse survivor in childhood is more likely to be a domestic violence survivor in adulthood, or more likely to experience rape in a dating setting or in a college setting. So when it's not addressed, when people don't have access to healing tools, it can have a long-term effect.
Yeah.
So I think when we started, I was like, I'm going to stop scaring you. I'm going to tell you hopeful things. So I'm going to shift to that, right? So the good news is that it is something that you can heal from, right? So you are not stuck in being a victim your whole life. In fact, our whole movement is built on the idea that people are victimized. It's not their choice, but they can and do survive it. In fact, they often gain incredible tools and capacity and demonstrate this beautiful healing process that they often share with others in the community. A vast majority of the people who do this healing work have their own connections to the issue and the topic. And that's true in any room you walk into. You're going to walk into a group of people who've been impacted by sexual assault because it's so pervasive. So we're all connected to it, even if it's not something that you think about every day the way that I do.
Yes, right.
We have the value and the benefit of over 40 years of experience of seeing survivors make the courageous decision to talk about it, to kind of get it out there, demonstrating that we believe them and that we're willing to sit with them as they talk through and walk through their stories with us.
Right.
And then find ways to heal from what they have within them, from the tools they have around them, from the communities of support that they connect to. And we've actually seen a lot of growth in our capacity to offer healing tools to the community as well. So in 2018, we actually added trauma therapy services in-house at SARC.
Okay.
This is relevant because, well, we've been doing this work for a long time. We know that listening to, believing, helping people get good information or navigate the systems makes a world of difference for survivors. There's some folks who will have a lasting traumatic impact based on what they experienced. But the good news is that there's actually treatment modalities that are specifically designed to help reduce the trauma symptoms and impacts long term.
That's good. Yeah.
I know, yeah. Right?
Yeah. I would never thought of that. Okay.
Yeah. So in 2018, we added trauma therapy because we have our trauma therapist specialize in two treatment modalities that are especially effective for sexual assault and abuse survivors. One is called EMDR.
Okay.
It stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy.
Yeah.
So what it does is it uses a bilateral stimulation and helps the survivor to sort of like tap into the neurosystems in the brain. Like it sounds really like, oh my gosh, this is like, you know, mad scientist fancy. Right. But what it actually does is, they will move stimulation from one side of the body to the other. So it might be like an eye movement. So using your, I'm moving my finger so Austin can see it back and forth across someone's face. Or there's tools called TheraTappers where it sort of like buzzes in one hand and then the other back and forth in a rhythmic fashion.
Okay.
And while the person is working through this, they're working through or thinking through the memories that sort of like are stuck points or struggle memories. For them in thinking through the trauma that they experienced. And it actually like turns down the volume on how hard the trauma is to think about over time, right? So so you will always have that. Yeah, it's very cool. Yeah, like the brain is an incredible thing,
right.
And has the capacity to do pretty scary stuff sometimes. Like one of the reasons why we got into doing this work is one of the common things that a sexual assault trauma survivor will experience is sort of like a hypervigilance or like a high stimulative reality.
Right?
Yeah, awareness. So like nightmares, flashbacks, things like that.
Okay.
Walking down the street and you smell someone who's wearing the cologne who was
it
the same,
it
was
the
same cologne that the perpetrator wore years ago. And it like, instead of it just being like, oh, that's I know what that is. It's like it puts you back into the moment of the trauma. So like you're there. You were in the same fear and struggle that you were 20 years ago. So like the brain can do that. It can like imprint traumatic memory in that way. But the good news is that we actually have learned about that and have learned about the tools that we can use to sort of like turn down the volume on that traumatic response.
Turning down the volume. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I can picture it now. Yep. I see what you're saying.
So you will always have the memory of what happened to you, but it won't disrupt your life, your nervous system, your physical body reactions in the same way.
I understand.
So that like that's the EMDR method or strategy. And then the other treatment modality that we got into is actually the first one we got into because we do so much work with kids and teens. I think we're talking on the break. It's like hundreds of children that we serve each year.
Yeah.
So TFCBT is the other modality that we adopted, trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy.
Okay.
And yes, Austin, I have practiced saying this over and over again.
Yeah.
I am not a therapist, but I did sleep at a Holiday Inn last night. No, I'm not a therapist. It's not, that's not what I do. I actually came into this from the advocacy side of things. The TFCBT modality is designed to be used with child sexual abuse victims or kids who've experienced trauma generally, and it's done in partnership with their non-offending caregiver. So their safe adult also gets a component of the treatment. The kid goes through the treatment, and they use a narrative with the therapist, so like working through the process of the trauma, what led up to it, the event itself, and the aftermath of it, and then use that narrative process to like regulate the emotion that goes with it, is what the young person does. And then the caregiver, the safe adult on the other side, is learning tools and strategies for being supportive and understanding and helping their child to regulate when they have those like hyper-reactive or hyper-vigilant reactions to the trauma in their daily lives.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like building the safe environment for young
people. Right here in Lebanon County. You know what I mean?
I know, right?
Local.
It's so cool.
And I think it is. It's great work that you're doing. And the fact that, you know, you have a team of people, and what I like you hit on, Allie, was that, you know, these advocates that are part of SARC, a part of the team, some of them have gone through this so they can relate. You know, like I've always thought, you know, if you're going to an AA meeting or something like that, you can bond or feel more comfortable because other people have been through it. You know what I mean? It's not like somebody that might not have gone through it. You can maybe relate better. I don't know how to put into words maybe, but yeah, I think you can, because they've gone through it. They've experienced it. It's just like with work, you know, you find someone that you can learn from and if they've gone through it, they can help you along the way, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think just knowing how common it is, it like we have a Actually, there's a picture of it on the annual report that I gave you.
Okay.
So we have a mural in our office. Where,
on the front here, yeah.
Yeah, like a long time ago, probably it's over 15 years ago now, we had a teen client who designed like a design of what the path to healing looks like.
Oh, wow.
So there's a whole like hallway where all our advocates' offices are in our building, which is right down the street, by the way, if you want to stop by anytime. Yeah. We're on Cumberland Street, real close.
Okay.
Yep. And you can come in and I will always like stop what I'm doing and show people this mural because it's just really cool.
That's awesome.
And it shows the path to healing. So it starts and it's it looks like a long path with like trees along it, and there's like a tunnel, because sometimes going through the healing process or the journey, there's a tunnel of darkness that you have to go through.
Yeah.
But there's also like bushes of support that are on this path, and that like there's the hope of the sunshine and the rainbow at the end, and the sky gets lighter as the path goes along. And all along this mural, we've invited folks who've come for services to put their handprints on it. So like if you look at this front cover, the tree, the leaves on the tree are all handprints.
Wow.
Right. So, and people will write little messages like, we believe you, or it's not your fault. And so we have this like whole wall of survivors who left their print and their messages for other people to see and hear.
Right.
Because you're not alone. This is a common experience.
Yeah.
Many people have come into this office before you, and hopefully fewer will have to come in after you, because we've talked about this. We are investing in prevention. We are shifting our family environments to be one that talks about things and helps set safe, you know, boundaries for kids in our life, you know, things like that. And so it kind of just gives this like beautiful message that like just walking into our office, walking in to see your counselor, your advocate, you are not by yourself. There's a whole group of people who've had this happen.
Yeah.
And healing is 100% possible.
Yeah. I love that, because it was you mentioned a teenager that it was their idea, you know, they came up with it, and now it's become such like a staple or a part of SARC, you know, and that others can add their handprint or their message, you know, add their story to it. It has to be encouraging for sure. Now, I wanted to hit on this because, you know, for sexual assault, what if, or how do you help someone that maybe they don't want to get out of the relation, the abuse, you know, they're just so used to it. How do you?
Yeah, well, so something that's really common is that there's like complex feelings that go into this, right? So someone might love the person who hurt them and hate the abuse that the person has perpetrated against them. Like both things can be true, at the same time.
Yeah.
One of the things that I would just encourage, and you know, people are going to have the right to make their choice about when, where, how, who they tell, what kind of support they get. We will never say this is the way you have to do it, because that would take choice away, and that like that's what the perpetrators of the violence do. It's not what the helpers who are supporting the healing process are going to do ever. But what we will do is share resources and information. So in Lebanon County, we have a 24-hour hotline. Schuylkill County, we also have a 24-hour hotline, but you're based in Lebanon, so I'm going to tell you the Lebanon number. Okay.
Yeah.
717-272-5308. So 24 hours a day, there is an advocate on call to take the calls of anyone who has questions, who wants to understand something that happened to them, who wants to explore their options, or who is really just having a very difficult time and needs to connect with someone who will believe them, offer support, and help them, you know, just get ready to make their choices to move forward in life. That's always available. Actually, I thought about emailing you yesterday or texting you yesterday, Austin, because I was on call last night. So I was like, oh, I'm going to be off of being the person on call at exactly 9 a.m. at like
I see what you're saying.
Right. So I was like, do I tell him that there's like the possibility
that you get a call
that I get a
at
call.
Like 8:58?
Right.
And that's more important than this for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I would have had it, but I was like, no, I'm just like, I'm not gonna I'm just gonna go with it. But so I did not get a call at 8:58 a.m.
So it worked out, yeah.
It all worked out,
right?
But the reality is that sexual assault can happen at any time of the day or night, right? So
yeah.
We also are available to go out to do hospital accompaniments. So our hotline is the way that hospital emergency rooms get in touch with us if there's someone who comes in for a forensic exam to gather evidence or to get medical care following a recent assault.
Okay.
An advocate actually goes out to the hospital to meet with that person, connect with them, and just help them navigate that process. Mm. So
be a friendly face, you know,
yeah,
someone
but,
there,
right.
you know, that
you can
trust. Yeah.
We talked a little bit earlier about how sexual assault is something that affects many different systems, right? So that like it's a crime, so it could be reportable to law enforcement or investigated
right.
by law enforcement. It might require medical care, might like there's just lots of things. But the people who work in those systems are doing specific jobs in those systems. So like law enforcement's job is to take the report and gather evidence to like support that a crime was committed.
Yeah.
The nurse examiner at the hospital, their job is to ensure that health and safety is preserved, that if there's like medication that needs to be administered, it's or you know, like they,
right.
they have a job there. But what an advocate's job is to be there with the person as they go through all those different things and decisions and help them to have a listening ear.
Mm-hmm.
To be believed, to help to begin to make sense of the emotional reactions and responses that they may experience. And so that's why we send advocates out. So when I was on call last night, like I could have been
you
called
could've.
To the hospital.
Yeah. Right.
And that happens, you know, here in Lebanon. Now I'm here with you today, so I'm not at the hospital.
Right.
So that's good. But I think that's important for folks to know too, that no
yeah.
matter when something happens or when you have questions, there is
you.
Always someone there for you.
Even the CEO.
Yeah. Even the CEO.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's like, I might use this conversation to just kind of tell the story a little bit about what that means and looks like. So, a cut to federal funding. I'm going to go like just talk about that because I feel like everybody's talking about it right now.
Yeah,
so when they talked
sure.
about a funding freeze at the federal level a couple weeks ago,
okay.
that would have taken away 50% of SARC's operating budget.
50%?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. So we're like
devastating.
Big. Yeah. So big devastating impact to lose access to federal funding. We do get some state funding to support victim services too, but that's been level for the last, I've written the same budget for grants for victim services for sexual assault for the last 8 years that I've been at SARC.
Yeah.
So like there is a distinct need. It is not adequately funded. We do incredible work with the resources that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And the CEO was on the hotline last night.
So right.
Like that's the kind of operation we're running here. We're not a big group
it's tight.
Of people.
You have to, yeah.
It's very tight and we're very like down and in and close with the work that we're doing.
Right.
And we're facing pretty devastating risk to funding. That's kind of coming down right now.
So for listeners or yeah. You know, anyone in the community, new listeners, current listeners, they want to get involved, want to support, maybe donate time or
yeah.
money, you know, how can they do that?
Yeah, so we do run volunteer training. So if you would like to get into supporting as a volunteer on the hotline, reach out. You can email info@sarcheals.org or submit a request on our website. We'll get you hooked up with the next volunteer training that we run. But we also do a lot in community work. So we have community councils that serve each of our two offices and they plan events. So like our Thriver Walk that I'm wearing the cool t-shirt
yeah.
for. Our community council is part of doing that. And that's really about fundraising. Next 2 weeks from now, we have our biggest fundraiser. It's
okay.
our Monte Carlo event at the Lebanon Country Club.
Oh, nice.
I know. And
where
it,
beautiful
like,
people are. The Country Club. That's what I say. But the Country Club is beautiful.
Yes,
it's
where,
nice.
It's where the beautiful people
right.
are. And
yeah.
I'll be
there
on
go.
March
right.
28th.
March
28th. Right? Yeah.
Okay.
But no, so we run fundraising events. We are trying constantly to just build the support that's needed to keep the operations running and continue to grow grow them out in ways that meet the needs of the survivors that we serve. So if people want to get involved, if they want to donate, definitely check out sarkheals.org. Check out our website. Come to one of our events coming up. If you have a business and you want to sponsor, we are always gladly accepting sponsorships. And I always like to tell people that, like, if you asked, you know, any nonprofit can tell you what their sort of like fundraising overhead is.
Okay.
It's like a calculation on their 990 federal return. So we run a very lean operation. So last year, SARC raised over $150,000 in charitable giving to just help like make the operations run.
Yeah.
But 96% of every donated dollar goes directly back into services.
96%. That's phenomenal.
Yeah. So that 4% is what's paying for us to like get the signs printed,
shoestring budget,
t-shirts, you know, like all that stuff. Right. We are really putting everything that we earn and gain directly back into making the lives and experiences better for survivors or preventing violence in the first place.
Yeah.
And that like, that's probably the thing that we didn't really talk about is that, you know, half our mission is prevention. So we got started doing this like advocacy, this healing work, but there's not a single person that works at SARC that wants to have to keep working with victims of sexual violence.
So
we want there to be no sexual violence. We want it to end. We want to eliminate it completely because that like that's the only way that it's we're going to work ourselves out of a job right?
Yeah.
So we do a ton in prevention work in the community. And I think because we have such a robust population of children that we serve, our prevention work really focuses heavily on child sexual abuse prevention. Also because that early victimization begets more victimization as time goes on.
Said,
so we want to keep victimization from happening in the first place.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So we have, I always describe it as when I first started, it was a three-prong approach. It's now probably four, but I'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
So the first prong is in teaching young people the skills that they need to avoid both victimization and perpetration in the future. So we used curricula like the Healthy Relationships Project at a Prevent Child Abuse Vermont, which helped teach skills around understanding emotions, understanding boundaries, understanding empathy, and as kids grow, the complexity of the information grows with them, right? So when we're working with preschoolers, because we start these programs as young as preschool, we're reading little critter books and we're learning about babies and baby care and adults do need to help very young children with hygiene, but there's boundaries to that and it's about safety, right?
Yeah.
As kids get older, so my daughter is in sixth grade. She's a budding like preteen and really into like Taylor Swift and teaches me words like Skibbity Riz at like an all.
I heard of Riz, but Skibbity. I never
Skibbity.
Heard of Skibbity.
Oh,
that's
well,
a new one.
Austin,
okay.
Your kids are they're
younger.
Two so
and
yeah.
One, yeah, but, yeah.
Unfortunately, I have to tell you, like,
oh, Lord.
Like I have become the like Gen Alpha translator
really?
For my family. So my daughter introduces words and I have to like figure out what they
it's
mean
like,
and then explain them to like my parents or her aunt, you know, like, that's all to say. My daughter is like in middle school age, right?
Okay. Yep.
So they're at a place where they're starting to talk about dating and relationships and they're beginning to like joke about some things that are, you know, a little bit more than knock-knock jokes. And the programs that we run really help kids as they're navigating those relationships to learn about healthy relationships, to learn about the difference between joking and flirting and sexual harassment and when you cross those lines. And it's also building that empathy and understanding your role as a bystander. If you see something problematic happening with your friends, like what do you say? How do you say something or do something to help to support their safety?
Right.
Or if your friends are doing something that you're not comfortable with, how do you hold them accountable to what acceptable sexual behavior and norms are, to keep everybody safe and well and healthy. So those are programs that we use with young people. The second prong to our prevention approach is really about educating parents and caregivers. So we have a program called Parents in the Know that actually helps parents learn the signs of grooming behavior and the skills for both talking with their children about setting safe boundaries and talking with other adults in the community about setting a safe boundary for your kids or for your value system as a family. Mm-hmm. And just practicing that in like a container safe environment, you know, because you don't want to be in the position of like, oh, I'm really uncomfortable and I don't know what to do. This gives you the information, the tools, and the practice to do something so that you know what you're going to do if and when something problematic happens or comes up. So it's like helping parents set safe expectations around their children, because we can't put the responsibility for stopping violence only on children.
Right.
We have to be talking about it as adults in the community. We have to be good stewards of, mm-hmm. of children and keeping them safe. The third prong is around training professionals in the community. So we do work with educators, with community organizations and groups. One of the trainings that I'm certified to train in is a mandated reporter training.
Okay.
So it meets state requirements if you like need it for your licensure and things like that. And you can learn the types of child abuse and what the process is for reporting it in Pennsylvania. And then like some of that info that I threw at you earlier about like the long-term impacts to health and wellness, like that's all in there too, because we want mandated reporters to not just know that they're mandated reporters. We want them to know how to identify the signs of potential abuse that's been experienced and then what to do about it to help help that child find safety again.
Yeah.
So we do a lot of training around that. Recently, we offered a trauma-certified professionals training as part of a community violence prevention grant that we were doing together with the Community Health Council. So that the goal there was to bring justice system and justice allied folks, so law enforcement, prison systems, probation, parole, drug and alcohol treatment, victim advocates, they all went through a trauma-sensitive professional certification. So it's like a 6-month course on understanding trauma, the impacts on the brain, and the ways it shows up in behavior, with the idea that if we understand trauma generally, so one of the things that unfortunately often happens is that people who are traumatized or have mental health issues or victimization issues, that like it seems like their behavior is erratic or it appears erratic, so law enforcement gets called in. So sometimes like mental health or mental illness issues can actually be like lead to prison, unfortunately, just because like, do you know what I mean?
Right.
So that like law enforcement doesn't want to have to be in that position that like they're there to catch the bad guys, but they're often the first line of defense or support or the only available resource that people know to call if someone is having a mental health crisis.
Right.
Or like with SARC, the victims that we work with may be really distraught or upset or like need to talk about what's happening. But the role and responsibility of law enforcement is to take the facts and investigate the crime.
Right.
But building understanding of trauma and good partnerships with community organizations like community-based victim advocates at SARC or having crisis intervention on call or co-responder work, it actually helps to mitigate the risk or the impact of mental health concerns and crises in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one example of a professionals training that we were doing. And then I told you we kind of expanded. We added another prong to our approach.
Yeah, you mentioned a fourth one.
So good prevention work doesn't just happen in educating individuals.
Okay.
It happens at the community level too. So understanding the systems and making informed choices about the systems in order to affect long-term change. So we implemented in partnership with Community Health Council and Domestic Violence Intervention and like other groups and organizations that are kind of like taking this big picture approach to prevention. It's called the Communities That Care model.
Okay.
So it is a longitudinal, so long-term process. It's meant to be implemented over decades, not months. And the
change
idea
takes time, right?
Right. I mean, you know, like true
doesn't
change.
Happen overnight.
So what it does is every 2 years, it tracks community data that contribute to risk factors for multiple forms of violence or just difficulties and challenges that the community might face.
Yeah.
And it watches and keeps track of that data and then makes sort of like whittles it down. So like the biggest risk factors for the community every 2 years are identified. And then we can also plug in the programs or the evidence-based programs that are likely to change those risk factors for the community.
Right, right. Yeah.
So so the example of like the law enforcement justice system training for trauma and mental health, that was one sort of like solution that was proposed to like a 4 years ago community risk factor problem. So Lebanon County, we found through the data 4 years ago, does worse than the other communities around us in mental health. And worse than the state in general in mental health.
Yeah.
So mental health was one of the primary risk factors that the Communities That Care process and model wanted to address.
Right.
So we then went and found treatment modalities that were effective for mental health. So Sark knew from our work that EMDR was incredibly important and meaningful for many forms of trauma. So we found grant funding and we offered scholarships to mental health professionals outside of Sark to get trained in using EMDR as a modality. And then so the idea is like there's no wrong door in getting help and support.
I see what you're saying.
Right?
Yeah. Because it takes a whole community.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. It absolutely
one
does.
One organization
and
can
not,
only do so much.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
And not ever, just like we talked about, we're seeing the tip of the iceberg in terms of sexual assault victims.
Right.
Not every victim is going to come through the doors or call the hotline. Right.
Yeah.
We know that they are probably connected in other places in the community, finding help in other places. We don't want them to not have a good response.
Someone
or
to go to.
Yeah, someone to
get
talk
the proper
to.
Help,
And most people, when they experience sexual assault, abuse, harassment, victimization, the hotline's not going to be their first call. The police station's not going to be their first stop.
Yeah.
The people they're telling are their loved ones, right? So if they're telling anyone, it's a friend, it's a family member, someone that they care about.
Right.
And we all have people we love. We all hear these things or provide support to those folks.
Yeah.
We want our community as a whole to understand this issue, be prepared to hear disclosures about it, and know what the resources are to help connect those folks to what they need to be whole, happy, and well.
Yeah, because I feel like, you know, friends or family, you're 100% correct, right? Like if I have any issues, right, I go to my wife or my parents. You know, you talk to the people that are closest to you because you feel comfortable sharing, you know, whatever it may be. But when that gets put on you, and I shouldn't say put on you, but when someone comes to you and your family with that, then what is your role, or how do you get that person help? You know, because sometimes you feel like, okay, well, like if someone came to me and said something, well, I can't, they should be the ones to tell their parents, or they should be the ones to tell their loved one, you know? So you see what I'm saying? Like, if it's family, you almost feel like you're going behind that person. You're betraying their trust because they trusted in you to share this, but yet, you know, they need help. So like, what would be I guess try to get them to call someone at SARC would be.
So it could be, you know, a first stop. It could be just offering that option. When it comes to children, so that's one of the things that we distinguish. I mentioned I'm a mandated reporter trainer. So a lot of folks out in the community are actually required to report child abuse under state law. So if you do any kind of work with children, if you're connected with an organization that does work with children, you are a mandated reporter. If you suspect that child abuse happened of any kind, whether it's physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, or trafficking, you are required to call Childline and report that abuse. But that's not limited. So if you are worried about or suspect abuse against a child and you're not a mandated reporter, so let's say mm-hmm. you're a bank teller who has no connection to a youth serving organization yeah. whatsoever, still serve an important role in the community, but you're not required under your job to do this, you can still be a permissive reporter. So you can call and report your suspicions or what information that you have to Childline as well. So I say that. And we don't want to take choice away from people when they've experienced mm-hmm. Choice taken away in violence. So when someone is an adult in the community, they get to decide when they report, if they report at all, and not everybody will. I try to make it as simple as possible. So if you're just a person out in the community and someone you love or care about comes to you and says, this happened to me, I'm really confused about it, I don't know what to do, I tell people three things. You should okay. listen, believe, and act. Okay, so like it's three things that you simple, can do.
Listen, believe, and act.
Yep. So yeah. The listen part, it takes incredible courage and usually a lot of like back and forth before someone comes and tells someone that they care about difficult or challenging information. Like I have experienced violence. Mm-hmm. That's a hard thing to talk about. And so having the ability to take a deep breath and recognize that the person trusts you with this information, that you can thank them and say, I'm so appreciative to you for trusting me and coming to talk with me about it. And then just give yourself the quiet space to be there and let them share what information they will. If you're a mandated reporter, like I am, for mm-hmm. example, one of the things that we tell folks is like, you want to tell them up front that this is a role that you have. And that's not to discourage them. Like I've talked with young people before and I've said, hey, listen, I work at SARC. So if someone tells me something scary that happened to them, it's my job that I have to try to find help for you.
Right.
But I just want you to know that, and so that you can make an informed choice about telling me, but I really want you to tell me if yeah. something bad is happening sure. to you, because yeah. I really want to help you to find safety.
Yep.
And I really want to do everything that I can to make sure that the bad thing stops happening. Mm-hmm. So you can do that in that listening part. Believing them is really about like remembering that the people who perpetrate these crimes, they want the survivors to think that no one will believe them. Like,
yeah.
because this is the type of violence that thrives in silence. So explicitly saying, I'm glad you told me, I believe what you're telling me, I'm sorry this happened to you, and I'm here for you.
Yeah.
Like that was four sentences that powerful, I just said.
Though. Very
four
powerful.
Powerful sentences.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And it's okay to tell someone that you believe what they're telling you. And I think that's important to remind people too. I think people get a little panicked in like the litigious society that would like, I am an employer, like I am a parent.
Yeah.
And you can say like, you can tell someone, hey, I'm really glad that you came to tell me about this. I think it's really important that you brought it to me. I'm going to do everything that I can to look into this and figure out what finding safety for you looks like and means. And that makes a big difference. So that's the belief part. And then mm-hmm. the act part is where, like you said, so what do? You just like give them the hotline number? Do you say, it might be that. It might be like, hey, I listened to this podcast, American Grown. I learned yeah. that every county has a sexual assault center in it. I will look up the hotline number for you. You can call and talk to someone, or I can call together with you. Or if you want to walk right? I'm here with you, and I will take action to help you get what you need. What do you need right now? And if it's like, I need to report this, like, okay, let's like, I'll help you find a ride to the police station. It might be doing things like that. Or, you know, let's say like, you're talking to someone who, like, this happened, but I'm just not in a space where I can talk about it. I don't want to support it. I just need you to know, and I need you to know why I've been snapping at you lately. Mm-hmm. Then, okay, like, you know what? I'm here. I'm glad you told me. I'm glad I understand it. And I know there's resources out there, and I'm ready to help you connect with them when you're ready. Those are things you can say too.
Yeah.
But I think just kind of having, I always tell people, like, if you do nothing else when I come to visit your group or your Lions Club or organization, whatever it is, keep one of our pamphlets in your back pocket, because you never know when you're going to need it.
Yeah.
And it's good to have it, and good to know that there are local resources, that there's folks who are specially trained in doing this, that there's no cost to getting the help. You don't need insurance in order to call and talk to someone on the hotline. These are all resources that are available in our community right now.
Yeah.
And I think just knowing what those resources are, or if the person's not ready to make that phone call, the other thing that I remind folks is, like, this is a hard disclosure to hear. You can if someone tells you, hey, this happened to me, but I'm not ready to do anything about it. And you are like, oh my gosh, what do I do with this information? You, Austin, can call the SARC hotline and talk to someone and say, hey, my friend told me this. I told them about you. I don't know if they're going to call you, but how do I help this person? And just start talking through strategies for what being a support person looks like in someone's life. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Wow.
So very cool.
Yeah.
Allie. So there's plenty to do.
Yeah, there is. And thank you for all this information and sharing it on the American Grown podcast here today. I wanted to just go over before we're kind of getting to the end, we're going to close out. But how can our listeners, again, just remind us, connect with SARC on the interwebs and social media and all that good stuff? Just if you could mention that again.
Yeah, absolutely. So SARC runs two hotlines. Okay. So in Lebanon County, you can call 717-272-5308, and it's Google County, it's 570-628-2965. We have a website, so you can go to sarcheals.org. We're on the socials, so you can follow @sarcheals to get updates on what we're doing, good information, relevant, news, things that are happening around sexual assault and sexual assault response. And we're connected in lots of different systems too. So if you walk into the hospital for support and you say, I really need to talk to a SARC advocate, the folks at the emergency room know our hotline number.
Perfect.
So they'll help you get connected too. And I think that's just a really important thing to know, and know that there's not going to be a wrong door when it comes to connecting with us. We have an incredible, a small but mighty staff who are working to end sexual violence one bit of effort at a time. And they're doing incredible work with not enough resources. And we really do need folks to be a part of the solution. So finding ways to connect, volunteer, attend events. There's all kinds of ways that you can be a part of the solution here.
And is there anybody, you mentioned your team, and I had that in the back of my head. And is there anybody you wanted to shout out? Because, obviously being the CEO, you have to have a great team with you,
Yeah. So if you call the SARC office, or you walk into the SARC office in either county, what you're likely going to run into, we have therapists in each office. So in Lebanon County, it's Norma and Reggie.
Okay.
In Schuylkill County, Aaron is our therapist. So we have advocates. So our advocacy team in Lebanon is Kristen and Tatiana. And in Schuylkill County, it's Alicia and Rachel. And then Steph is kind of overseeing advocacy. We have prevention educators. So Clarissa, Julia, and Caitlin are our incredible prevention education team. And then we've got a couple of interns at any given time who help out and are a part of the work that we do in many different ways. So we do have a lot of folks who are working and supporting us along the way. And, you know, as I said, we're a small team. It's like 13 people who do this work.
Yeah.
But it's really just incredible work that we're doing, and a whole with dozens of volunteers and board members who will show up and help with putting events on and things like that. So it's really great. We have a great community. Actually, that's one of the things that I probably should mention and shout out. We have so much volunteer effort that goes into what we do. We had over 3,500 hours of volunteer service given last year.
Wow.
And one of the things that I think is really cool is that the state puts a value on a volunteer service hour. So okay. if I go volunteer, it's valued at a dollar amount. So the volunteer service that was given to SARC equated to over $100,000 in in-kind support.
Yeah.
So like I talk about the
that's
dollar stuff because
impact,
it's huge.
Yeah.
Think
about it. That is. Yeah.
It's a big chunk of what we do.
Right.
Yeah. So we really rely heavily on our volunteers, and we're an organization. We have paid staff now, but when we started in the 80s, it was all volunteer. Yeah. So
that makes a huge difference. Just volunteering.
Yeah.
You know what I
just
mean?
Volunteering gives back. I got invited to talk at a community service group at LVC's campus a year or two ago. And that was one of the things that I told them, especially when you're first getting started out in the world, you don't make tons of money in your first grown-up job, or at least if you work at a place like SARC, like I did, you really don't make a lot of money. You're not doing it for the cash. But what you can give is time, and you can give your talent in the community, and connecting in the community just makes a huge difference in terms of, find something you're passionate about. If it's SARC, great. We're happy to have you. If it's, drug and alcohol response, great. If it's youth league coaching, which I also do.
Okay.
Great. But get connected, give your time, be a caring, safe human being and help be a part of making the community better and stronger, and it'll make a difference. Yeah.
Perfect. Allie, it's a great way to end it. So a small but mighty team at SARC. And before we do close out though, I want to give you one last chance. Is there anything else you'd like to cover that, I might have missed or anything?
Oh, okay. So my board members would probably not let me live it down if I didn't mention that SARC started a supported housing program last year. So we are almost a year into owning our first residential properties and offering supported rent to survivors, which is really cool. My board members would not forgive me if I didn't mention this. We have two houses right now, but we would love to have 5 or 10 of them in order to be able to expand out this work. Our two houses that we have are in Schuylkill County, and I don't have any houses in Lebanon County yet.
We gotta get that.
Really love to. So if you happen to have a house that you that you want to donate to a really good mission, we would gladly accept it, and it would allow us to continue to do that work of setting the safe foundation from which people can heal from.
Yeah, we definitely need one here in Lebanon County.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
We
got to make that happen, people. Somebody out there, I know there's some people that listen that flip houses and stuff, so yeah, let's make that happen. Especially here in Lebanon County.
Yeah.
Awesome. Right. Well, Allie, this has been great.
Oh my gosh,
great,
it's been so fun.
You.
Thank you.
I love it. And the blue,
remind
me of the teal blue.
Teal is the color of sexual assault prevention.
Okay.
So Sexual Assault Awareness Month is teal. SARC's colors are teal. So if you find something that looks super teal in the community, probably is SARC connected, or we want you to buy it and bring it to me, because as you can see, I have my teal blazer
it.
On.
I love
I'm rocking it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the color of sexual assault prevention.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Excellent. Awesome, Allie. Well, thank you so much
for
coming in today. Allie Pareto, CEO of SARC, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors.
Modern Gent Customs is your go-to for all your custom apparel and headwear needs. From individuals to businesses, with no minimums or design fees ever, inquire today at info@moderngentcustoms.com.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop. Veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
Hostler Engraving is your local source for unique, quality-driven laser-engraved gifts for all occasions. Place an order today by visiting our Facebook page at Hostler Engraving. You won't be disappointed.
Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran-owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.